Hello, Peter Lynham.
How are you going there?
Good, Peter. And yourself?
Yep. Yeah, that's right. I am deep in the heart of profound research. I tell you, it's very exciting to that. Just a little lift out of it to talk about something contemporary instead.
Mm-hmm. It's obviously all kicking off in the US with potentially a huge change to abortion law on the cards.
Yes, and this is really what I wanted to focus on today, because there's lots and lots of religious dimensions as well as political dimensions to the issue that's blown up, even though you'd imagine that at least in the Supreme Court people would know not to leak documents. But we've seen that draft judgment, and it tells us that a revolution's about to take place in abortion rights
okay.
in the USA.
Just give us a bit of background on this, would you, Peter?
Okay, so the famous case was in 1972, which was a case where a woman who was in her third pregnancy, she'd had two children already, didn't wish to have more children, sought to have an abortion. She lived in Texas. In Texas, there were laws against abortion except when the mother's life was in danger. In this case, there was not a question that the mother's life was in danger. And so they refused to grant her this. Anyway, meanwhile, she had the baby, but she proceeded to take the case with the support of others to the Supreme Court. And in the Supreme Court, it became an absolute turning point of the issue of women's rights. Because what the Supreme Court found, very surprisingly, by a judgment of 7-2, there are 9 Supreme Court judges altogether, and by a field of 7-2, they found that a woman had a right to privacy, and that it was the right to privacy that was breached by the state deciding whether or not she was entitled to have an abortion, because she had to compromise her privacy in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the judgment has always been seen as a critical point in what's been called the positive approach to law that the US Supreme Court has often taken. That's to say, it's effectively created a new law by its judgments. And so it effectively overturned almost every state in the Union had some kinds of restrictions to abortion. And suddenly they were all overturned and reverted back to this issue of only on the basis of where the right to privacy was compromised by other rights could the state intervene. And effectively what that's meant is freely available abortion in the USA.
Mm-hmm. It just meant on a state-by-state basis states could choose whether or not to make abortion illegal.
Yes, up to that point, mm-hmm. it had been totally up to each state, and it had been hard fought, and there were various solutions. So in states where there was maybe a Catholic majority or a significant Catholic presence, abortion was almost impossible. In other states, generally, when the mother's life was in danger, that would be a grounds for abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And there were various other sort of qualifications. And actually, of course, New Zealand and most of the British and Commonwealth type states had laws somewhat of the same sort.
This particular decision or court case had somewhat of a global impact. Is that correct? If other people or other countries...
A huge impact, because it's set as a standard for women's rights, the right to control your own body.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's of profound importance in defining modern feminism and the notions in which feminism relates to the ability to choose how you will conduct yourself,
mm-hmm.
And to have what medical interventions you choose for your body.
And,
so
and currently,
it's really important.
Currently, with the the way the Supreme Court is made up in the US, they're basically about to overturn.
It would appear so, and I mean, this has been part of the work that Trump had the unique privilege of appointing think I'm right, 4 Supreme Court judges. So by appointing 4 out of the 9, he was able to pull the court back towards a much more conservative position, replacing a lot of top lawyers who took a kind of creative approach that the law could extend the rights of the Constitution on a principled basis to those who argued differently. Incidentally, there's a wee trick in the way in which they've done that, in that quite a strong opinion within the court seen in the most recent, the last of Trump's judges, was appointed. She took a what's called an originalist position, and the originalist position said that you didn't need to stick to what were the actual words of the law, but you had to stick to the intentions of those who made the original law. And this is not unlike the debate we had over the Treaty of Waitangi. You know, does the Treaty of Waitangi, can it be extended to aspects of property and possessions like the airwaves that would never have been thought of in when it was made in 1840? And so effectively, the strict interpretation of the law obviously would rule that out. But an originalist position might ask you to say, well, could they have conceived of it? And if they couldn't have conceived of it, then you can't extend the law in that way. Whereas you might argue, but the words of the law, let it be interpreted this way so you can make this judgment. So originalism is having quite a big influence on the court. And, I mean, my word, clearly the early Supreme Court of the US of A and the lawmakers, because you have to go back to the lawmakers, would certainly not have seen when they protected the individual against the force of the state that they were giving women a right to interfere with their own bodies. So it all depends how you approach the law. And there's a big religious dimension to this, a very big religious dimension to this.
Is that just because of obviously the power of the church in the southern states?
Yes, I think that's part of it, but it's also true that there's been a shift in the kinds of groups that are interested in the subject of abortion. See, back in the 1970s, I suppose most church people were fairly conservative on the subject, but there was one church which stood out far beyond all the others, and that was the Catholic Church, which has always opposed abortion. But the change that has taken place since then is the developments of the political evangelicals, the fundamentalists, and the what was originally called the moral majority, means that now there's another party along with the Catholics who are very worked up on this issue. And this is the evangelicals, and they were the ones who pressured Trump into appointing these conservative judges. And indeed, quite a number of these conservative judges are from that kind of religious background. So it's quite intriguing, because at present what we have is a president who is Catholic and who says that privately he's opposed to abortion, but publicly he's in favor of the right to abortion in the case of Roe versus Wade.
Women should have the liberty to choose.
Yes, that's right. And so, I mean, he's in a... well, anyway, he can do nothing about what the Supreme Court decides.
What does that mean? And what will the outcome be, that abortion will become illegal in more states?
Well, all it will mean is that the grounds to have an abortion will not be established. And so there's a space, and essentially the states will either have to see if their original laws are still there, or they'll all get into the act of each individual state trying to make a law on abortion that suits what is the current balance in their state. I mean, it's going to be quite an extraordinary thing. And it's obvious enough that within the Senate, there'll be an attempt to get a federal law. But I think the chance of getting a federal law at the moment are virtually zero. Because of the division between the Congress, within the Congress and the Senate. You know, it's really quite sharp between the representatives and the Senate. And so the Senate just has that one seat Republican advantage, but I don't think that be sufficient to create a universal law stopping abortion. The Democrats would quite like to get a law that gave the right for women to have an abortion. Hmm. That has got no hope of getting through the Senate.
What do you think the global implications of this reduction in women's liberty? What do you think that'll?
I think if we looked at a number of signs around the world, but especially in the US, I think it would be fair to say that a lot of the liberal measures that we've come to be regarded as the mark of a good Western state, a lot of those are under threat at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And this is partly because that as the measures have become more extensive, especially, for example, take the issue of rights for trans people,
mm-hmm.
And the like, that these are creating greater and greater divisions within society. And I fear that some of the liberal bases have been undercut by, in a way, conservative economics, conservative religious communities. There is a new conservatism about, and it's got more power than it previously had. I think it could inspire some measures. I think New Zealand would be very slow to join in them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're certainly there in the UK, in Australia, most strongly in Australia. And I think we have to acknowledge that what we assumed was a liberal state and the freedom of both women and all groups that felt that they weren't in charge to protect their own rights, it's in a way under threat at the moment.
Peter, do you think one week we could look at the drivers of this growing religious conservatism?
Yes, I think we should.
Mm.
I really think we should try and work it out because it's very present and yet it's sort of intangible. Why on earth would this be happening?
Mm. Yeah, it seems strange, but I mean...
And the old conservatism and the new conservatism look quite different beasts in some way.
Mm.
And that's also a puzzle. There's a whole lot of things like indigenous rights, for example. But indigenous peoples aren't necessarily liberal.
Mm.
So those are all the part of the complication.
Okay.
Let's do that. We'll do that sometime soon.
All right. Hey, Peter Lynham, thank you very much. Very interesting as always, and we'll check in with you next week.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.